Hey everyone, on this episode of 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna, I'm joined by Goalie Gear Nerd, who you know from Twitter, Instagram, all across social media as the expert when it comes to all things goaltending equipment. We've got an awful lot in common, we're very close to the same age, so we grew up liking the same things, being able to talk about them with one another. It's a lot of fun to sit down and talk technology, history, where the position of goaltending and the equipment is going, all those types of things. So hope you enjoy Goalie Gear Nerd.
Should I call you Mr. Nerd or Goalie Gear Nerd or just, you know, Nerd for short? What do you think's best here?
No, just call me, I don't care what you call me, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the beginning of this. Not everybody in the world becomes so in tune to something that they're so passionate about. Mm-hmm. What's the genesis of Goalie Gear Nerd? What made you be passionate about the position of goaltending?
Yeah, I think it's a very obscure and deep obsession, which honestly is one that I thought I was the only one that had. I really felt like I was the only one in the world that thought about this stuff to the degree that I do, and come to find out that people share this. So yeah, I mean, like a lot of kids, very young, got exposed to hockey, and I remember the first goalie I ever saw. My mom collected hockey cards. It was the Kirk McLean Vancouver Canucks Pro Set card. Him standing there in his black Vaughn Legacy pads. And I remember looking at the picture going, I have no idea what this is, but that guy looks awesome.
And it wasn't just the black pads. It was also the Nash blocker.
Yes, that's right.
And the Hespeler stick.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that was a unique setup.
It was iconic. The mask was amazing. He just was a month ago or so, put it all back on for an alumni thing. And so I think that was the genesis of it, and started playing. And I was that kid that carried, you know, hockey catalogs around with me. You could send out for the Gunzo's catalog, the Ocean's hockey catalog. And we would go to restaurants or wherever, and I would tote these catalogs around and just thumb through them endlessly.
I had a binder of them.
Yeah.
Because you could get them from USA Hockey.
Yeah,
that
okay.
was what it was. If you were an American mm-hmm. and you got USA Hockey, or if you're Canadian, doesn't mm-hmm. matter where you are, mm-hmm. but you could page through those magazines.
Yeah.
And like you said, you call them up and they send you a catalog. Ocean, Great Skate, South
yes.
Windsor.
Yes.
And I had a huge binder of them. It was the
yes.
exact same way.
Yeah, it was before iPads and things like that. And so that's what it was. And then, you know, later going on in life and working in both retail and with equipment companies, obviously, that obsession only kind of has grown over time. And I just think goalie equipment is really unique in terms of compared to other sports, in the sense that goalies wear so much of it, so it's so obvious when you look at goalies. I think maybe fencing and Formula One racing are the only sports where the athlete is covered more. And then also because the fact is that the equipment is as much about performance as it is about protection, if not more about performance than protection. So it's kind of the tools that you play the game with.
And that shifted over time, though.
Yes.
It used to be strictly protection.
Right.
And
right.
that's always the fight we have, because right. the people that are running the regulations are thinking
right.
this is purely performance.
Right.
When do you think that switch flipped?
That's a really great question. I think over time, you know, there are certain companies that realize they could just continue to scale the sizes of things. And you look at some of the cards, you know, let's think of some of these Aeroflex gloves from like the 90s that were just huge. And I think that they started realizing that you could skirt those rules. There was not as many controls within the game about the size of goalies' gear. And then they obviously throttled that kind of way, 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 way back. And I also think that, you know, when you started seeing some enhancements in the gear, like putting like knee blocks and pads and changing completely how a leg pad rotates, and all of a sudden going from a goalie falling on the face of their pad to all of a sudden now having at that time 12 inches when you're in the 12 inch width of coverage all on the bottom of the net, that changed the dynamic completely. And all of a sudden, I think goalies now really start seeing these are performance additives. It's really not about protection anymore.
And that happened during my career.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, the pads, you'd wear them as tight as you could, mm-hmm. and you'd fall in the front of them, and you'd mm-hmm. see the knee rolls because it was still real leather, or
right.
at least the the chlorino they used back then, you could literally wear it out.
Right.
And you'd see the inside of the knees, almost to the middle of the pad, would be worn completely.
Right.
And I think by college, for me, is when it started to change because guys started to wear their pads loose.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first wave. And mm-hmm. you realize that your pads could now rotate,
right.
take up space.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned into a complete rotation. And like, do you think, I'm thinking that really the velocity is kind of what ushered in. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's understood now that it was really Pete Smith, who's now with Warrior. He was working at Vaughn at the time. He was really the one that came up with the concept of the knee block. And so for those of you that don't know the exact, you know, some of the specific mechanics of goalie pads, that's about a 1-inch piece of foam that goes up against the side of the knee, and the knee lands on that now when you go into a butterfly.
Some people call it the landing
gear.
Knee exactly stacks, right. landing gear,
right. yeah, exactly
knee
right.
block. Yeah,
yeah. yeah. So, and that, as you said, changed everything in terms of all of a sudden the pads are rotating. And I know there's a story about Kiprusoff, how, you know, he when he came into league, he did okay for with San Jose, but he went to the Flames, and one of, and I don't remember who it was at the time, one of the coaches advised him to start strapping his pads a lot looser to allow for that rotation, and instead changed his game.
I bet it was David Marcoux.
It could have been. That makes sense chronologically. And so that was huge. And I think really within goalie gear over the last 15, 20 years, I mean, that's probably the biggest advancement. Because like I said, it completely changed how pads not only perform and how goalies perform, and ushered in subsequent changes, things like being able to take the cowling off of skates. It changed the technique of the game and the position.
Isn't it fun when you find an old piece of gear, though, to look back and just see how much it's changed and kind of envision what it was like to play with this? Like, look at a picture of Glenn Hall, how big his blocker was.
Right.
It was massive.
Right. Or there's an interesting story about Glenn Hall. I heard a couple weeks ago how when he was with St. Louis, he was using a Stan Musial baseball glove. That they had actually sewn a cuff onto.
That was my first catching glove as a kid.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
I caught with my right hand.
Okay, yeah.
My grandpa was left-handed, and he had a first baseman's glove that we sewed a cuff onto.
Right, okay.
Out of Naugahyde and plastic and foam, and that's what I would use like in the basement to protect my wrist when I try to catch pucks. It's the exact same thing.
That's so funny, and yeah, it shows you how, and that's what they were doing for, I mean, really only in the last 30, 40 years where they've said they've made very specific catch gloves that perform well and things like that. They were still doing things like that, sewing things on, and which is unbelievable compared to where it is today.
Do you miss that level of customization that the athlete would actually do themselves, or the trainer, the equipment manager, as opposed to it all coming from the factory new now?
That's really interesting because I think pros, and you can probably speak this way more than I can, but my understanding is that pros really vary in terms of how much they think about their gear. You know, you had that great, great podcast with Todd Brown talking about stuff, the lengths that Belfour went to, and how
throwing pucks at pads on walls to see what the rebounds would do,
which is unbelievable,
crazy, but it makes sense,
right?
To do that stuff,
exactly right. And I think some pros go to those levels, and now they have the opportunity to work with those companies, and the companies have those resources to kind of do that level of innovation. But there's guys at the other end of the spectrum that they're just like, give me a new catcher. I don't care what it is. I'll make it work and things like that. So, you know, it's cool that some of them are real big tinkerers. I think some of them still do that to a certain extent. I think it's probably good that the goalie's not sitting behind a sewing machine anymore. Leave it to the pros.
It's been fun, the few interactions that like Ryan Miller and I have had at times talking about, because I know we were both big tinkerers with gear, like you said. You think about goalies historically and how we've been considered weird and oddballs. And I hold the contention that that's because we're creative. And I think it's gone away a little bit now because it's a very plug-and-play position. You go to the store, you pick your stuff out. It's so optimized, it works.
Right.
Well, it didn't always used to work for your body.
Right.
I can remember getting pads that would not rotate for me when I was 13 or 14, and I was cutting foam out of them, doing everything that I could.
Really?
And that's just how it was. Because it was just throwing spaghetti at the wall back then.
Yeah.
So I think that level of creativity maybe is what draws people to the position in some ways too.
Yeah, and it seems to be a common language for the position. And I think that... they've said, someone said a while ago, recently, and I think I found it to be true, when I've had the rare opportunity that I've had to interact with various pros, I got to meet Cujo at something. The first words out of my mouth were, you know, the Heat and Pro 90Zs that you wore with St. Louis were iconic. And he just lit up and was like, oh, Brian Heaton was a genius, and the whole backstory is this common language we don't have. And even my understanding is among other pros and other goalies that they will actually go and constantly be talking to other goalies, trying to, again, looking for little enhancements. Because the gear now is so much of a performance optimizer, it's this thing we're all kind of fascinated with.
Let's dig in on Cujo's gear a bit back
then.
Oh,
gosh, yeah.
Like the 90Zs,
yes.
And the transition to TPS, mm-hmm. And the brief interlude with Brown.
Yes.
What do you know about that time frame of Cujo?
That's a great question. So I don't know tremendous amount. I know that he really – so he came out of those Heatons and had a deal with Louisville and was really working with them to help create those TPSs. The pads at the time, I believe there were some challenges about trying to get close to five holes. So he was wearing some brown pads at the time with a Heaton puck foil on the bottom of them.
I think they were brown Excels, I think.
Yeah, I think they were. While he kind of worked through some of those enhancements. And it was really, really interesting because he had a hand in helping design all of that. And then subsequently, Louisville actually went out and got Brian Heaton to come on board and design for them, which I think was a little bit later. But yeah, those TPSs were really, he was really ushered in and really pulled that company into the goalie market and had a significant amount of success for years to come. You know, guys like Lundqvist and things like that wearing the gear.
I thought it was interesting though that they... he was in the Flexor line and not in the Butterfly line.
Yes. Because
their marketing was all the Butterfly line.
And yes.
Like all the Quebec guys back then, Jaguar, when they were younger.
Yeah, Luongo.
They were all in the Butterfly. And then here he comes with a completely new pad called Flexor that was kind of built around his stylings.
Yeah, my understanding is at the time he really had a desire to be able to have the fronts of the pads kind of collapse inward to help close that five hole. A little bit ahead of his time in thinking that to use the top portion of what we now call the thigh rise to help close that five hole, that really wasn't a concept quite yet. And so that was kind of his thinking and them trying to kind of figure out how to do that kind of biomechanically. But yeah, it was a very, very cool line. I still have some TPS stuff actually in my house, you know, hung on my wall for that exactly that reason.
I had the Butterfly blocker, and then I ended up, the only time I used Brian's in my career was an Angle Light blocker, which is that same oblique shape that was essentially it was a knockoff of the TPS Butterfly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I liked it because I could go paddle down with it easier. Yeah. Like it was a nice innovation at the time.
Yeah.
Who do you think really ushered in the taller thigh rises, though, as a mechanic to block the five hole?
Oh, that is a really great question.
I think a Trevor Kidd wore really tall ones. Yeah. Cujo started to wear tall ones in Edmonton.
Yes. I would say that was Cujo is the one that comes to mind where he started going taller and taller and taller. Because Cujo is a gear nerd. I mean, he really does, as I said in my interaction with him, you know, he really is things he thinks about. And so, yeah, his really tall TPS pads immediately come to mind. Kids, even when Cujo went to the Bowers, when he was with Toronto, they were pretty tall for the time. And that was really, again, when the kind of goalies everywhere were starting to understand the knee blocks are starting to come in as well. That okay, I can land on the inside of my pad, and I can actually close the five with that thigh rise, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and that changed everything with it. Think about the thigh boards.
Right.
Not just the knee blocks, but the thigh boards.
Yes.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's go into the background of it. It's the first time I noticed it was with Coho. So it was Lefebvre doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
What ushered in that change from what you found and who came up with that idea? Do you have any idea?
No, I don't know who came up with the original one. So I don't want to give false credit to anyone. But really, Lefebvre, really, the genesis of their company and their being in Quebec and, you know, the birthplace of Butterfly, so to speak, at least the modern interpretation of Butterfly, having a very large square piece that's attached to the pad. Again, back at that time, a Butterfly wasn't bringing the thighs together or bringing the knees together and flaring at your ankles. It was really just kind of closing up the five hole, and there really wasn't the seal that there is today. So there was that exposure with the knee. wearing separate knee guards really exposed you to injury. So having these large kind of square pieces became an extra blocking surface, which is why the NHL ruled them out finally. And pros
guys started to get a little aggressive with them, though. I mean,
exactly.
Jiggy might have had 15 inches, you know.
They were pretty large. And Jiggy with his Jiggy Fly Ride, the super narrow butterfly, you know, all of a sudden you were creating a whole new blocking surface, kind of a mini blocker between your legs. And they were very effective. But yeah, again, finally deemed to be, you know, we know what these are, how you guys are using these.
I got a funny story on that. So when I ended up in Portland the first time, 2008 or so, I guess it was mm-hmm. with the Ducks organization, mm-hmm. and Francois Allaire was there.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, like I've worked with Korn before. Mm-hmm. Now I'm getting Frankie Allaire.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable, you right. know? And I loved working with Frankie though. Like his skating, his groundwork, a lot of his things that he said to me made a lot of sense and helped me. But I remember going down in the butterfly and he goes, okay, now bring your feet together, like in the back, right?
Really?
Like Jiggy
okay.
did.
And, okay.
Well, I have a very naturally wide butterfly, but he wanted to see how my equipment worked.
Interesting.
So Frankie, he had me bring my heels together and he looked at my knees and I had on like the first generation Reebok knee guards, I think at the time, Bauer 195 pads.
Okay.
And there's a hole.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's not good enough.
Really?
He goes, we got to change that. You're going to wear new pants tomorrow. We'll order them from CCM. You wear those and you wear the knee guard underneath.
Really?
And that's how it works. And so.
Fascinating.
And I had to redesign the whole knee stack in conjunction with Bauer.
Okay.
To get it to lay flat and sit properly.
Uh-huh.
So that was the first step. And then wearing the pants that had the padlock knee section over.
Yes.
And those got outlawed too.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, and now you have to have separate knee guards to your pants.
Yeah.
But that was my introduction to Francois Allaire.
Really?
Who was so instrumental with Patrick Waugh.
Of course. Yeah.
And how they always push the boundaries with equipment.
And what's interesting is that there are a lot of goalie coaches, and we did some research on this a while ago, asking goalie coaches how many of them who feel like they're experts in technique are also experts in equipment. And very few, only about a third of them, said they felt like they really were proficient in the equipment side. And I see that as an opportunity where we can kind of help educate because I'm not an expert in technique. I do not recommend taking any technique lessons from me.
We've never seen you in action that I can think
I strongly recommend against it. I think it's those rare goalie coaches that do like Allaire, they really understand how it all works together. How again the equipment is a tool to enhance the performance. That's huge. And that's why people like Francois Allaire, there's only one of him.
But that's why I loved it. Because to me, if I wasn't wearing as big a gear as I possibly could,
mm-hmm.
at least stuff that let me move, right? Like
not
stupid to the extent that I couldn't perform.
Right.
I wasn't cheating. I was hurting my team.
True.
Because I was within the rules.
Right.
I was never outside the rules.
Right.
And I remember like when I got called up to Tampa that next year after Portland, right? I'd just been with Frankie, so I'm learning all the ins and outs.
Yeah.
Like, I'd come up with my own ways, though, too. And I got my arm and chest protector to sit as high as I could. I'd wear it like a turtle
shell. You're a big guy as is.
And I got square shoulders, but mm-hmm. I'd wear it like a turtle shell. I'd pull everything as cinched as tight as I possibly could.
Uh-huh.
So with the old rules, it would sit 4 inches almost above my shoulders at times or when I'd go down. And I remember we're playing a game against Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like 2 weeks in the league. Nobody even knows who I am.
Yeah.
And it was Trip Tracy from the broadcast on Carolina called the league on me to make sure that the American League guys are being checked to see if their equipment's legal.
I was going to ask you, how often did you run into that?
And I was like, I found out about this later and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. All my stuff, even for the American League guys, mm-hmm. even for the East Coast League guys.
Has to clear.
It all has a signature. Even back then, it all went through Kay Whitmore.
Uh-huh.
That really upset me. Because I'm doing everything by the letter of the law, but then I'm suddenly the scapegoat, this kid who's just getting to the league.
Right, and I think that's always this common misconception about goalies in general. They're always thinking, oh, they're just standing there, and they're just making themselves into a billboard and things like that. And shooters are too good, and the game is too fast that, you know, again, the equipment is a tool. Now, have there been times, you know, a la Garth Snow, when you say, okay, maybe we're trying to take up a little bit more space than is necessary. Sure.
You're flaunting the rules at that point.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, but at the same time, the level of scrutiny, I think, is too much when it comes to goaltenders. And I think that goalies, the position has advanced from a technical perspective so much. Yes, the equipment has as well to kind of keep pace. But the advancements we've seen in goaltending have been, first and foremost, technique, secondarily, equipment.
When you think back to when goalie gear started to bring all the color in, mm-hmm. went away from the natural tan.
Yeah.
Who do you think were some of the first guys to really have iconic equipment? When you think of the whole Ooh. Setup and the overall look, we already talked about McLean.
Yeah.
And his was unique because it was such a mismatch, too.
Yeah,
by today's standards,
that's
people would be calling, the internet kiddies would be going bananas on this guy because his blocker doesn't match his pads.
Right, exactly.
You
yes,
know?
Yes.
So
it'd have been a pariah.
Right.
One of the first that I recall that did it was Ken Dryden had a Bayard blocker that was blue. It was one of the first times that, and he had asked for it. He asked for a colored blocker because they were no longer, I think it actually might still be leather. They got red and blue, and those are in the Hall of Fame still, and you can see them. And that was one of the first cases of non-brown leather being used in equipment. In terms of just becoming iconic later on, there are so many gorgeous sets. I loved Andy Moog in Boston because he had the gear that was black and white Vaughn, but he also had the mask to match it. And in my opinion, some of the greatest setups, it's not just the gear. It's you've got to have the mask to match. Pogvin, Cujo, those guys that had these really iconic setups. They were head to toe. But I love Andy Moog's. The original black and whites with the Bruin mask was fantastic. But again, I think as you go down the way, Pogvin I think was one of the ones that changed it. Trevor Kidd were as well equally were just phenomenal.
Baba Senza in Winnipeg. Think how simple that setup was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was absolutely iconic. Red, white, and blue.
Yeah.
Simple design mask.
Yeah. And it's funny how things translate and the colors and changes. Here's an interesting one. How quickly the things became, because goalies are so into history and of the position and things like that. So Andy Moog had the black and white setup. And then he had gotten for, I don't remember what anniversary of the team it was, but Boston was having, they were going to do these special jerseys. So he actually asked Vaughn for a set of tan colored gear and he got traded to Dallas. And so the tan gear that he's in Dallas and is actually something he actually had worked once and goes, it totally works. I just kept it.
No way. Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
And then that mask is
he was the only guy that actually really ran retro gear.
Way ahead of his time.
And he ran it. It wasn't for a one-off.
No,
like they do
it
now.
Wasn't. Yeah, and there's a picture of him on this great vintage Vaughn poster that's in my office, and he's in that. But the sad part is, and I know you and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, we were talking about that setup, and he said, oh, yeah, the mask I'm wearing is my Bruins mask painted over. And some of these masks, they're just so iconic. You're like, no, but they didn't have the budget back then or the time to get a new mask painted, built and painted to them in a week or two.
Isn't it amazing how much masks have changed?
Yes.
You talk to people that wanted to get a Harrison back in the day, and it was a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
Absolute works of art.
Right.
But, like, Harrison, Cubberly,
mm-hmm.
and Warwick in that age group
yeah.
in the beginning of it, think about how much that's changed. It's unbelievable
yes.
the technology difference we have now compared to what it used to be.
There are far more painters, obviously, with the internet and everything like that. There's so much more access to painters. There's also, in the last few years, there's been new techniques like vinyl be available. You can send off and they can vinyl wrap masks now.
I still think that's the future.
I have to agree. We have a mask from a company called SkinFX that did one of the Goalie Gearner masks, and it's unbelievable because you give him a couple of images, he pushes it on the mask, you send it to him, he prints it out, he wraps it. When it arrived at his house, and 24 hours later, he was sending it back.
Yeah, I think once they really get the design and the artwork side dialed into vinyl wrapping,
yes,
that's going to be
the durability.
Think about how quick it is.
Yeah, that's
you
the
know,
thing.
If the durability is the challenge, then maybe that improves that the equipment guys can wrap it themselves. Kids can wrap it themselves. You know,
yeah,
there's a future to this.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's something that you're going to see across the entire goalie equipment industry is this ability to kind of plug and play designs. I really feel like the future of equipment retail is that. It's going to be less retail. It puts a tremendous strain on retailers to buy a huge amount of inventory of goalie equipment, putting them on shelves, huge amount of their floor space, hoping you got the right colors and sizes. I think there is going to be, in the next few years, much more. You go in, your kid picks the brand he likes, the size he wants, you bring your iPad, you submit an order on an iPad, they send it off to the factory, and all of a sudden it arrives at your door a few weeks later.
So maybe they just keep a few demo sets that you can at least look at, get the feel of, yeah. And then you dial it in.
Now, for super young kids that, you know, are still growing, you do need a set tomorrow because they've grown out of it. I think there's still going to be a market for that. But for, you know, guys like you and I that are really into, well, you don't have to buy your gear, but
well, guys, I do. I will now.
Maybe.
But I got to stay pseudo in the game somehow. So hopefully I can keep those coming. But yeah,
that's true.
I don't wear them out as quickly as I used to now. But.
No, I wouldn't think you would. But yeah, for the gear nerds out there, you know, you'll be able to go and again kind of plug and play. And so masks and I think gear now, it's going to be so much more customized to the individual in terms of colors and images and things like that.
There doesn't seem to be a limit to what you're going to be able to do.
No.
I mean, it seems like Bauer really broke the door down with the digital imaging.
Yeah.
It really bothers me when kids and people in general, it looks like street hockey pads.
Yeah.
That just bugs me. And when I had the Reactor 5 retro set that I did for Dallas.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever. I get to wear my favorite pad of all time again.
Yeah.
In a modern setup.
Yeah.
And I can remember people bagging on it, saying, "Oh, it doesn't look." And of course, it doesn't look real. It's a tribute. Like, it doesn't. It's just not the way it's going to be. Yeah. Like, it's not supposed to be perfect.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a tribute to what I wore.
Right.
In a modern version,
it's like the Tenacious D song. It's not the real thing. It's just a tribute,
right?
And that's exactly what it is. And I don't think that Bauer with the digital printing and what they've done with the whole Odin initiative, I think it has been tremendous. And one of the biggest things that's happened probably in the last 5 years, them being able to essentially, you know, they are 3D printing these graphics. I don't think people appreciate that these graphics wrap around. There's an outer roll. So it's not just them printing something on, you know, a piece of paper and slapping it on a piece of foam. It's so much more advanced than that. And I did have the opportunity to go to Blaineville earlier this year and got to sit with the team that helped create this and hearing the stories and the iterations and what it took to bring this to market has been, it's pretty tremendous. And now I had the opportunity to actually create my own true design set through Bauer. And it's just, you're right, the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's not just the colors on these things either in the design. I mean, that actual initiative to build something new.
Yes.
Start clean sheet.
Yes.
Let's build something new.
Yeah.
I remember when I got my first set of, I guess they would have been Odins when they were prototypes, but turned into the 1S.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they were skinned like an NXG.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And, you know, the digital printing wasn't on yet. It kind of looked like they'd been left out in the rain.
Yeah.
But they were so good when I put them on. They were so light. They slid so well. They sealed the ice so much better than anything I'd ever had.
Right.
I didn't care what they looked like.
Yeah.
And I knew that I need to get into these. But it was a transition because it was all elastics too.
Yes.
So I had about a week where I was like, I see the benefit to this.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get used to this because it's going to make me a better goalie.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, I think I was right. After about a week or so, I felt fine in them.
Right.
But man, I remember people looking at those and just thinking, this is wacky, you know?
Yeah, they are truly ahead of their time. As you said, to Bauer's credit, I mean, the initiative was really just start from scratch. Blank piece of paper. If you had an unlimited budget, what would you do? And the three concepts that finally made it to the final round, one of them became the Odin goalie pad, subsequently the 1S. And I still feel like it's something people are starting to get their heads around.
Well, it's finally kind of caught on. Look at the number of people that are using the 2X now.
Yes.
Which was probably a little bit more mainstream compared to what I prefer. The 2S is what I still love.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I can understand why people like the 2X now.
Right.
And it's what it affords to that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're seeing other companies do similar stuff now too, right? Like the new Axis pad seems to have incorporated, or looks like it is, kind of similar concepts that it's almost like when Pete Smith broke the door down originally with his foam pads.
Right.
The Aeroflex, yes. The Vicks.
Yes.
Game changers. Total right. Game changers back then.
Right. And there's something called the Red Queen effect in the economics they talk about, you know, that you have to constantly adapt to what your competitors are doing in order to stay competitive in the marketplace. And I think that all the equipment companies are now realizing it can't just be foam and Gen Pro and leather straps and call it a day. There really has to be true innovation, because again, these are tools, you know, with which you play the position, and they are performance enhancers. So you've got to stay up there.
Well, and think about, like, you know, Vaughn's used a bunch of carbon now.
Yes.
Everybody's trying to find a way.
Right.
You know, and people always ask me, hey, what's the best pads? And I've worn yeah. Bauer for 20 years.
Yeah.
I love their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think across the board, everybody makes good gear now.
Yeah.
I think it really just comes down to your preference with stuff.
Precisely.
And how much you dial it in.
Precisely. And that's a big message that I try to push, because it's a question I get all the time. And I'll even get questions within certain brands. They'll say, oh, what's better, the Warrior G4 or the GT2? And it's about aligning the goalie, their style, their preferences with the product. And trying to... Price point, too.
Let's be honest. Like,
yes.
Not everybody has the luxury like I did to get free gear.
Absolutely. And that's actually a really important point. And what's interesting is that from a retail perspective, you have seen, especially the last few years, them stocking a lot less pro line equipment and much more the second tier, quote unquote, senior line. That is by far the highest selling segment retail wise, is people buy that second tier because the differences are relatively nuanced.
Have you seen big improvement in that line too?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, the senior line was kind of a joke that you knew it was going to break down in 3 months.
Right.
And why even bother?
Right. The distinction between the pro lines and the senior lines is much, much, much less than it used to be, as you said. It was a huge step down to the non-pro lines previously. They're much closer. Usually it's a small difference in some materials, usually not the core main materials. And then usually some customization, of course. But really, the senior line is a really, really, really competitive product today.
Flipping back to what we just touched on briefly, the Aeroflex,
yes.
The Pete Smith.
Yes.
There's another name in there that escapes me right now, that Greg Millen, Reggie Lemelin. Millen credited Lemelin with the guy who kind of broke the door down wearing these things. When you see those in person,
yes.
And how different they were.
Yes.
What thoughts?
The Aerolites or the
Wind Light. Wind Light. That's what I was looking for.
Yes.
What goes through your mind when you look at those in terms of today?
Yeah.
What's still used from those pads?
It's interesting. They were, again, kind of ahead of their time because the goalie's leg really kind of went inside the pad. There was a huge channel that your leg went into. So it was almost semi-precursor to the knee block. You were kind of almost falling within that segment. And again, for the time, as you were talking about, the trend was to strap down, you know, your leather straps as tight against your leg as possible, because you wanted your movements to translate through the pad all the time. What the Wind Lights and Aeroflex, what they did so well, is they really wrapped around your leg. So they became a little bit, they moved with you a little bit better. And that's something that you've seen over and over, a recent trend now, because really, as of this past year, the stock strapping on the main company's pads don't have leather straps anymore. These companies have realized now that it's more about enveloping the leg and having that movement translate through the pad, although wearing it much looser, that they've really gone away from those straps. So in a way, it was kind of ahead of time in that way as well.
I find that interesting how we've changed all the strapping completely on its head. I used to wear my pads tight as a kid. As I got older, towards, I guess, high school or so, I remember seeing Byron Defoe had a really loose heel strap on his pads, skate strap.
Yeah.
And I realized that's letting the pad shift up his leg to take up the five hole.
Precisely.
So I started to do that.
Yes.
Then I saw that Hasek had his pads on loose and they rotated. And Steve Shields, too.
Yes.
And they had angular thigh rises that helped the pads close.
Yes.
Like, all these things you're thinking about at the time. Then it got to the point we'd wear them so loose that the pads felt like they were falling off our legs to get them to rotate, and they weren't really attached to our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And now with the elastic, they have the ability to rotate, but you feel very connected to your gear.
Right.
That's what I felt immediately is the big advantage with the elastic.
Yeah, and there's actually been studies. There's a within the goalie circles, there's a pretty famous study that was done by a guy named Ryan Frain, who's a PhD in biomechanics. And I had the opportunity to meet Ryan back at CCM last year. And he had actually done, as part of his thesis, partnered with CCM to do these studies on pad drop velocity and what is optimal strapping for that. And he found exactly that. It's really about where the straps are and getting rid of the leather straps. And it really informed CCM and how they were, how they set up their stock strapping. A lot of the other companies had kind of similar inclinations and were already heading that direction, but he was actually able to quantify it with them, which I think is really fascinating. So yeah, leather straps are a thing of the past. I mean, it's amazing. Again, 30, 40 years ago, you're talking about leather pads. There was a short period of time that there were the nylon pads. My first pads were Aeroflex, all nylon pads.
Did you ever freeze through the ice?
No, I
had Coho Evolutions. Those are my first pads, like the Herbe style ones.
Yes.
And I would freeze to the ice.
Really?
If the ice was not completely frozen, like if there was still a little water left from the Zamboni and I stayed in the same place too long, I'd freeze.
I probably would spend more time on my back.
Doing the backstroke.
Exactly right. Yes, the pre-hashic. But yeah, looking at kind of what they were back then to today and the advanced materials like we're talking about in the strapping is just unbelievable.
What else is going to go extinct soon?
Oh, that's a really good question. Foam core sticks are dead. Foam core sticks next 5 years. There is only a handful of pros still using them. Biggest obvious one, Flurry. Brian Elliott, there's maybe a smattering. I track it, and I don't remember off the top of my head.
I think I was in the first wave. I was 2011 when I switched.
So what prompted, why did you see the light before others in terms of composite sticks?
Because it was tech. Mm-hmm. It was a chance for me to have a leg up on anybody.
Really?
You know, and I grew up in racing, so we're always looking for a technological advantage. Mm-hmm. I would drill out my cowlings before I put them on my skates.
I saw that picture. I'd never noticed that before.
Yeah, I'd drill them out to make them lighter.
Mm-hmm.
No, little did I know, I probably should have just cut the cowling off totally.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And really gone for it.
Yeah.
But those are the things I would do to try to have any advantage I could. So I got these sticks. 2011, Bauer made them for me for the first time, and Ottawa didn't want to buy them because they were expensive.
Sure.
And it's okay. We'll buy you a dozen.
Okay.
And we'll buy you some wood ones too. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll save those for games. Well, you can't really switch back and forth. Like you need to use what you play with.
Right.
But those sticks lasted me. I think I went through 13 of them all season or something.
Really?
Yeah. And they lasted forever. But it wasn't the durability why I loved them. I loved them because they were light, because they were really thin.
Mm-hmm.
So I could shoot really well. I could deflect how I wanted, but they were consistent.
I was going to say, that is a theme I've heard over again. It's the consistency for the pros that really helped
it's
them.
It's just like Brett Hall when he first got his composite blades. Uh-huh. I don't have to curve them anymore. I don't have to shape them.
Okay.
I don't have to do anything else. I just come, I put them in my shaft, and I'm ready to go. That's the way it was for me with the goalie sticks. I knew what I was getting every single time. And the performance benefits were there, too.
Sure.
But I never understood the logic of everybody saying that they're too light or it doesn't feel right when the puck hits it. And I'm like, you guys are all stuck in the mud. You're saying the exact same things that the players were saying in 2005 when everybody was switching over to synergies.
Right.
You know, 2003 to 2006 when that happened.
Yeah.
Well, guess what's happened now?
Right.
It's taken that same time frame, and now every goalie's using composite for obvious reasons.
Right. You don't want to be the, I think it was one of the CEOs for one of the mobile, I think it was Nokia, that when the iPhone came out, he said, well, everybody wants key, you know, everyone's always going to want a keypad on their phone. It's like, I don't think so. And I think that people need to embrace that. And again, it's foam core sticks are one of the main factories in Drummondville closed a few years ago. The one in Finland that's used by Warrior recently closed. So it is something that the companies are actively pushing. They even got Bobrovsky in the composite this year, which I thought he was going to be one of the last to change just because of his uniquely steep hit grip.
Right.
And he just seems to be reticent to change. He went to composite this year. So I think that's the end of foam core.
Yeah, and part of that too is the companies are now catering with the shoulders.
Yes.
It seems like there's a renaissance in that now.
Yes.
Guys are really starting to play around with the shoulders of their stick.
Yeah.
My goalie stick is based off a Grant Fuhrer Pro pattern.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got it at Pirani's in Detroit when I was 15 on a road trip.
Uh-huh.
And I took that, I changed the curve a little bit, added a little toe. Marty Turco, and we would love to talk about this.
Oh, right?
But so added a little toe, and I sent that to Sherwood at the time.
Uh-huh.
And so from that point forward, my stick has always been based off a Grant Fuhrer Pro pattern.
Interesting.
But my shoulders are offset. The bottom side's about a half inch or 3/4 inch offset to the top.
Okay.
Which wasn't that strange. It existed.
Was it control or orientation of your block?
I just love the feel. I like the feel of it. Just it was pure feel on it, really. It felt natural to me. But now everybody's putting trigger grips and very shallow shoulders for some of the Euro guys that like to grip lower. And where do you think that's all coming from?
Yeah, there's been a lot of, again, because we wear so much gear and there are people that are nerding out like us, that think about every little small spec. There's been the obvious question of people saying, is the way we hold our stick and for those again that don't know, putting your index finger across the paddle, is that the most optimal way from a performance perspective, being able to control the stick, putting the stick along the ice, and then as well as just a protection perspective. So the challenge to composite has been, you can't just take a Dremel and cut the grip out.
You can't curve it.
You can't curve it, exactly.
Yeah.
So now in regards to the grip, that has changed dramatically. With the pros, they all now have access to that. It's one of the things I got to see was really interesting at Bauer this year is they had a whole long line in Lee Britt's cubicle of paddles from all these different NHLers who are asking for a stay lock, the really unique patterns, and they actually will mark them and then 3D scan them essentially to then create the grips that go on the composite sticks. I think that technology, like everything, will start at the pro level and then will trickle down. Like I said, I think there'll be a time you can go to a retail store and get a custom goalie stick ordered. That will come. The idea behind it again also is just more control over the stick. That's why Stalock started with the trigger grip. His dad used to cut out that little finger notch to give him a little bit more control over it. Also for things like Hank, he has that very, Henrik Lundqvist has a very square paddle. He does it to really kind of orient his hand. He feels like it allows his blocker hand to be a little bit more active. So I think it's great that people are kind of thinking about that. Again, it's so much easier though. That's the one advantage of foam core. You can Dremel it out and test it out. Composite, you can't do that, unfortunately.
How long until we see cowlings go away completely on skates?
They're basically dead.
They're dead at retail.
They're dead at retail.
But the pros are hanging on because we got some relics out there that are still using them.
I know. You've got John Gibsons. You've got the Dubniks, who are both wearing Reebok era skates.
And Gibson's relatively young.
Yeah, I know.
Hold on for a while here.
Exactly. And he has some interesting specs because he's holding on to leather straps. He has a two-piece glove. I mean, he does have some of his older specs for being a young guy. It just works for him. You can't really argue with those results. I think that it's interesting when it comes to some of those innovations, the pros are a little bit late because you go with the gear that got you there. So they're a little bit more reticent to change. You'd be hard pressed to find a goalie that's not, I would say, CHL or D1, there's not probably a single goalie with cowlings on their skates. So you give it another few years, there will not be a single pro, maybe with the exception of Gibson, if he's still playing, they still have the cowlings going.
That's another one that I was early into. The moment Bauer sent me whatever it was, Bauer Pro, I think, was the skate.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually discontinued it because it was basically me and Freddie Anderson were the only two using it.
Yeah, really?
I loved that skate.
Really?
Yeah. But in any case, the 3mm blade, I loved it out of the box.
Really?
But I play forward in the summertime.
Okay.
So I've been used to skating on 3mm blades.
Mm-hmm.
They're rockered like a player skate, obviously,
mm-hmm.
But that didn't faze me at all going to the narrower blade. And I actually liked it because I felt more mobile. Like I didn't have as much blade in the ice. Yes. It wasn't as clunky.
Yes.
It's taken forever for a lot of guys to get to that. It's almost taken the younger generation that's bought 3mm blades in stores that are now wearing them. Because there's a lot of pros still in the 4mm.
Yes. Yes. There are still, yes. And that is actually, True has come with VH prior to that. They do a 4mm blade. They only do a 4mm blade in their skates.
And it's heavy, though, too. That's the problem.
And it's why you see a lot of goalies, though. And when they decided to do that, they had just asked a bunch of pros, what do you prefer? And a lot of them said 4. But there are a lot of guys, Tuukka Rask and others, that will wear the True boot but with a Bauer Vertex holder to get that 3mm.
Do you know who was the first to do that?
I'm gonna guess you.
Okay.
All right.
That was a phone conversation with True when
really?
It was VH. Still, I remember calling and saying, like, listen, I had the one piece skate with the 4mm and the full carbon cowling and everything.
Okay.
And then I had the Bauer, whichever version, Supreme, I guess. And I'm like, man, the boot for the True is incredible. I don't like the blade, but I love the Bauer blade.
Yeah.
And I called him like, do you think we can merge these? Because it was, again, I wanted the 3mm and I wanted to be able to change it too. Like if I've lost an edge in a game and having that trigger is so nice.
Yeah.
And I know we've all seen the video of Tuukka throwing the blade.
Yeah.
But that happens so rarely.
No.
You're willing to risk it as a goalie.
I agree. The whole perception about the risk of blades popping out is so remote. Considering the reps, these guys put their skates through.
It happened to me twice in 3 years.
Yeah, but I mean, you were on the ice literally every single day.
Every day. Yeah.
And putting it through as high of impact and just stress testing it far beyond what a normal goalie like me, a civilian, would be doing with it. I always say it's analogous to it would not using one of those triggers for fear of the blade coming out is analogous to saying I got a fender bender and I'm never going to drive again. You know, it's they're so unique and so they're so atypical. It happens.
We've talked an awful lot about new stuff, about innovation.
Yeah.
You like me though, that you have a special place in your heart when you see somebody order up some just super old school gear with straps all over it and toe buckles.
Yes.
You know, does that just warm your heart when you
see
that?
It does. It's the reason why I still follow Jonas Hiller, who's over in Switzerland and he's playing his last season, because he's still rocking, you know, gosh, at least 4 or 5 leather straps and the toe buckles. And I there is something. Because, it reminds us of our childhood and some of these older sets. And it's really cool now. There's a whole market for tribute gear. There's a guy named Joni, I don't remember how to pronounce his last name, or Bonnie, that makes the tribute gear.
Finnish guy, right?
Finnish, yes.
He's unbelievable.
Yes. Some of the stuff he's created, he did a Grant Fuhr set recently. He does gloves from scratch. Pads usually works with another company. And it looks just like the stuff 30.
He's an equipment manager over in Finland, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. And he is a hardcore gear nerd. This guy is unbelievable in his knowledge and his collection. He has this unbelievable office that is, I will get to Finland someday to go and see it.
His Rick Walmsley tribute Calgary set is the greatest.
Yes, yes.
Like the Cooper Legends pads.
Yes.
With the red nylon front on them.
Yes, yes.
Oh.
Yes, and it's so fun that, you know, that because I don't really know any other sport that does that, to that degree anyway. Because, again, we wear so much damn gear. We wear so much of it that it's interesting, and it gives us the opportunity to do tribute and vintage sets like that.
It's kind of like vintage racing. Maybe that's the only comparison.
Okay.
Like there are people who are super into vintage cars.
Okay.
It's kind of like how the gear is for us in some ways.
Totally. Yeah. And it's a callback to a different era. And it's always kind of fun. That's why I really always make sure that I try to watch the alumni games for like the Winter Classic. Because a lot of times either they're wearing older gear or they have had a company design a new set and make it look old. I think that stuff's just so cool.
Well, how about when somebody strides out on the ice wearing a flat Jason mask from the 70s.
Yeah. Remember, was it Leonard that did that?
Leonard did it in practice in Buffalo.
Yes, he did. And that was pretty incredible. And I that was before our time. I don't think we ever stepped on the ice either one of us. I think I had the birdcage.
I had a combo.
Okay.
Yeah. I started with a combo that was kind of similar to Hasek style.
Okay.
Straight bars, but it wasn't. By, I guess, 11 or 12, I had my first proper, it was a Badger Elite, actually.
Okay, okay.
Plastic.
Okay. Yeah.
With the cage dented everywhere, but that was my first goalie mask.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting. And it's so fun, because especially talking to goalies about old gear, you can always, there's a great picture of Brian Elliott, I think he was getting like a Brian's hook for Christmas. There's always that one piece that I think every goalie got for a birthday, for Christmas, or just whatever, that has a very special place in your heart. Do you have a specific piece that you think back and say, that was the one that I got that I was like so excited about?
It was everything. I think the one piece that I wanted my whole life, as a kid at least, was a Bauer stick, of all things. It wasn't even just the equipment when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
There was this stick. It was a black and teal Bauer.
Okay.
And I'm full right, so there weren't a lot of sticks available. Mm-hmm. And this thing was sitting in a store in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And it was there for like a year, and I have to have this. Wow. This is perfect. The curve, the flex, you know, everything about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I finally got it, and I got two of them. And that's the only ones I ever saw. They were Bauer Supremes.
Uh-huh.
They were white with teal, but the blade was still wood. So they had the foil on them back then, and it was before they went to being, like, they weren't even Cooper 5s, right?
You know, yeah.
This was still old school Bauer, and that was it for me. And it was the way that it was shaped was different. It was kind of rectangular in comparison. And
really?
I still have it somewhere. Like, I've got it in the archives. But that was it for me. And I got it maybe at Christmas time or something. And that thing was in the bed with me immediately.
Oh,
you know?
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Because we all have that goalie moment of, like, sleeping with your gear.
I do vividly remember that.
You can't explain that to people. Your first bedmate was a piece of gear.
Yes, exactly. You know? Exactly. And maybe this is where there's a perception of goalies being weird. But it's so, they're so, again, part of our identity. You know, they're just a core part of our being is our gear. And, you know, again, because if, especially as a kid, when I was 14, anybody could show me 10% of Felix Potvin's setup, and I know exactly who he is, who he was. Yeah, at 14, I don't know if Felix Potvin was walking down the street if I would have recognized him. Because, again, I know the boys by their gear. That's those special pieces of gear kind of have a special place in my heart.
Has it been amazing through all your travels as Goalie Gear Nerd,
mm-hmm.
throughout the socials and throughout the world,
yeah.
but it's amazing all the people that come out of the woodwork that are goalie people, isn't it?
Yes. On multiple levels.
Celebrities.
Celebrities. Celebrities. I know you interviewed Jay Weinberg.
Drummer for Slipknot.
Yeah. And he reached out. I got a picture of him touring the Hall of Fame archives. And it was just a picture of him holding some goalie gear. And you have to request to go to the archive section of the Hockey Hall of Fame. And so I just posted the picture and said, oh, apparently he's a gear nerd. And he immediately messaged me and said, I'm an absolute gear nerd. And we talked about goalie gear and very nice guy. What was it? Is it Jax Taylor?
Jax Taylor's a huge goalie.
And
really maybe the biggest goalie advocate within the celebrity community, to be honest with you.
Easily. He tagged me in a question last night about Laurent Brossoit's pads and the question about that. He, within, I would say, months of Goalie Gear Nerd started messaging me. And we would just talk about me having no idea who he was, talking about the Heatons he wore when he played in Detroit and just reminiscing about gear and just... And then I realized he had a verified Instagram account. And I said, who the hell is this guy?
Did you ask your wife?
I did, actually.
We hope to record someday, Jax and I, but
because
we're waiting to do it in person, right? But it's the same thing. My wife was like, do you know who you're talking to?
No.
And I'm like, well, no, not at first, but now I do. And now I'm, you know, watching Vanderpump Rules with my wife.
Well, because I got to support him now too. Yeah.
But yeah. It's like, this guy's one of us, you know, like we're all in the same boat with this stuff.
It is a small, wonderful fraternity. And I don't mean that in just a male sense, but maybe union is a better word, because it is really so much fun to get to interact with all these people. It is this common language. Goalies just, again, we're our own kind of special brotherhood, and it kind of transcends everything else.
But you don't have to have played pro hockey to be in the union. True. That's the cool part.
Yes, very true.
Because for me, I've met people who are, normal beer league goalies, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can sense it that they're a little bit kind of on guard, right? Because of where I've played.
Sure, of course.
That's all out the window within the first sentence or two, because we're just talking gear and goalie.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You really find the commonalities in people through that.
Yeah, and what's interesting also is I've gotten a fair amount of messages from people that say, hey, I'm actually a player. I've never played goalie. I just think goalie gear is cool. And then we'll chat about goalie gear that they're just fascinated from it, just from a subject matter perspective, which I think is interesting.
I've had a lot of teammates like that.
Really?
Yeah, they always will say, oh, I was always a goalie in road hockey or ball hockey.
Really?
And this guy's gear was the best. It happens a lot in locker rooms.
Right. I think that the groups that I play with, I've hopefully piqued their interest a bit, because I tend to show up in new sets because I'm always testing stuff.
Right.
And they're always wondering what's he going to pull out of his bag today. And I always have mixed reactions, but at least they're more aware of it now.
You never get over getting a new box of gear, though, do
no.
you?
No. I don't think that changes ever. I mean, for you, you've gotten far more gear than most. And I think you're right that it is like Christmas morning. Every time.
Yeah. No matter what, even if it's the same gear, you're still excited.
Even if it's a set of knee pads or pants, I'm like, this is great. I can't wait to get these out there. And
I always liked that with suspenders.
Oh, yeah. Those are hard to find good ones.
Somebody's got to remake the Easton suspenders.
Yeah.
They were the best ones. All the other ones are too short.
Yeah.
But I'd take my suspenders and I would get rid of all the plastic on them.
Yeah.
And I'd have my equipment manager just sew the elastic in a loop at the bottom and put it through it so they would never break.
That's very smart.
And I would run them until they absolutely wore threadbare.
You see the buttons on the pants though?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, there's another Finnish company called Kova that has really done a lot and is getting very, because they have, it's very much like that. They're big, thick suspenders. And like, now it used to be just the Finnish goalies, but now like Bobrovsky, a lot of people, a couple of pros that I think I'm not supposed to say yet, but they're going to be seeing them. They have them, and they're fantastic. But you're right, good suspenders are a hard thing to find.
Is it fun for you to get that insider perspective sometimes?
No, it is. It is. And I try not to lord it over anyone, but I also try to be respectful. Because one of the things that has been really rewarding with Goalie Gear Nerd is how quickly the equipment companies really embraced what I was trying to do. And because I'm trying to do it in a respectful way, the whole idea was to create a little bit higher level narrative around the gear. It'd be a little bit more informative than just, hey, here's a picture of a goalie wearing some cool stuff. Answer kind of some of the functional questions and kind of get some of that insight out there. And how quickly the gear companies kind of said, we're very responsive and said, we like what you're doing and kind of willing to work with me, and I try very much to be respectful of the relationship where they might have something on the horizon that they want me to know so I can kind of help get the word out, but I can't quite yet.
With all the insider knowledge that you have, and without divulging anything that's proprietary, where do you see goalie gear going in the next 5-10 years?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think that from the big areas of focus are going to be on one, continue to be on materials. Again, Gen Pro and foam, those are continued to, they're looking, going to get more and more advanced materials, obviously. I think that's just a trend that's been happening for quite some time. I think also the big things you're going to look at are two safety areas. Concussions, obviously, I think that's across all sports, an area that people are very concerned with. And I know for a fact that the gear companies are taking them very seriously. The NHL has enhanced their own testing this year, finally, because of the rate of concussions we're seeing. So there's a lot of work from an R&D perspective inside the companies in regards to that. And the other safety area is looking at how to minimize the impact of hips on goalies. Hips on goalies are like elbows to pitchers, is the area that gets worn out. And again, quoting Dr. Ryan Frayne here, he had told us that the impact of hips when a goalie butterfly drops into a butterfly is 3 times their body weight. So they're taking a huge amount of impact. So the companies are working very hard to find ways to design knee blocks and the pads themselves in a way to minimize that impact as much as possible. So I think those are really the big trends you're going to see. And then as well, as I said earlier, the continued customization. Everything is going to be more customized, easier to customize, you know, at the point of sale, you know, boom.
I asked you about the future of goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
What's the future of Goalie Gear Nerd?
Thanks for asking that. So Goalie Gear Nerd now is on Instagram and Twitter. Those are the initial places that we put out there because it was just easier to kind of create an audience. We'll be launching goaliegearnerd.com in the coming weeks, and it's going to be content that is very unique. And again, it's pretty nerdy. I'm going to warn you right now. So, but it, the idea is that
you don't have to warn anybody because it's what we crave. Why do you think everybody goes to it?
But it's going to be content that is one not well suited for Instagram or Twitter. It's a lot of really deeper dives into things. So, for example, I did an interview with Andy Moog just talking about him having to wear the clear iTech shield in the 88 Olympics. What's the story behind that? Or like we have a joint friend of Matt from Vintage Goalie. He's going to be a guest contributor because he's done some work with Armadillo.
Amazing guy.
A fantastic guy, deep industry experience, passionate goalie, just a great human being.
Got to hang out with him in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Went to his house, went to dinner together. Consider him a great friend.
Yeah.
Amazing guy. Love Vintage Goalie.
Great, great dude. So we'll have that on the site. We're going to have some other things like a catalog repository. You'll be able to go and say, you know, what is the 92 Sherwood catalog? And be able to go through and actually have scanned images of that. As well as actually have a master matrix of all of what the pros are wearing and how they're wearing them. So there's actually a database that we've built. It's off of last season. We're updating for this season. It's 85 pro goalies. You're on there.
I still made the cut.
45 different specs on their gear. Not just what they're wearing, but how they're wearing it. Because again, the whole point of Goalie Gear Nerd is not only just to celebrate kind of the history and talk about things kind of from a design perspective, but also to inform. So the idea being that you can look and say how many goalies in the NHL are wearing, for example, 3 millimeter blades versus 4 millimeter blades, or why, how many goalies are using elastic toe ties. Well, and then also subsequent sections explaining what's the benefit of those, what's the drawback of those. So again, just trying to put that out there in the form. And there would be some more initiatives for Goalie Gear Nerd kind of later on 2020, but that's the big next thing that we're working on.
Thanks for listening to 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. Please make sure that you like, comment, leave a rating, subscribe, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere that you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.